Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob.
Talking.Golf is sponsored by the American Family Insurance Championship in Madison. Tournament week is over. We have a new champion in Ernie Els. It's time to get ready for the 2025 American Family Insurance Championship, which will move to the TPC Wisconsin in Madison. So stay tuned to amfamchampionship.com for more details on the tournament for next year. Since its debut in 2016, the AmFam Champ has raised over $17 million for charity, with proceeds distributed through the Steve Stricker American Family Foundation. Along with Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez here, and we were just talking before we came on the air, folks, here with Talking.Golf. We haven't done one of these since before the state tournament. We intended to get one in before, I think, we started the AmFam, but Gary D'Amato, I do not remember a more intense week and a half of golf coverage than we've gone through here since the start of the state high school tournament.
It's been crazy, Rob. There was, you know, you were at the state high school tournament, and then I was at AmFam, and you joined me there. You covered U.S. Junior qualifying in the meantime, and there was all kinds of news coming out of the AmFam this year. And then we played TPC Wisconsin, and you went straight into the Women's State Open. So, yeah, it's been 10 days of pretty intensive golf coverage.
Well, and then you also left out, because I heard it when I was came back to write here after the State Women's Open. I was watching live from the U.S. Open, and Noda Begay was on, and you had an audience with Noda over at U.S. Senior Open qualifying at Oconomowoc Golf Club. He got through there along with Brad Lanning, a couple old Stanford teammates, I guess, right? And, I mean, my goodness. I mean, you know, what hasn't happened in the last 2 weeks?
You know, you just brought that up, Rob, and it feels like that was a year ago. That's how much golf we've covered in the last 10 days. Yeah, I forgot all about that. Yeah, it's going to be fun to see those guys, Noda and Brad, who were best friends and high school teammates and qualified here in the Milwaukee area. It'd be fun to see them playing in the U.S. Senior Open. That's awesome.
Well, let's start first with the AM family. I appreciate their sponsorship here the last couple months of Talking.Golf, and really appreciate, again, the great championship they gave us from the opening news conferences that you covered, and we'll get to that in a second, to the very end, the playoff between Steve Stricker and Ernie Els. I don't remember an AmFam chock full of as much activity as we saw at University Ridge.
No, it was, there was something great to write about every day. Something, you know, unfortunate to start the week with Jerry Kelly talking about his rheumatoid arthritis diagnosis. And we hope that he, finds the right medications and gets that under control so that he can play the kind of golf we know he's capable of. And then, you know, all the news that came out of it, a great finish with Steve and Ernie Els, who's sort of on the kind of roll that Steve was on last year, you know. Now, back-to-back wins and four straight top tens, including two in majors. So Ernie's a hot guy on the Champions Tour right now, Rob.
I'm getting a little feedback here. Do you have a window open?
No.
No? Okay, that's weird. And it's not mine either. I don't know. You know, and it's appropriate, though, because all we've done is cover golf tournaments in the wind, right?
That's right. You're hearing wind. I'm in my office. I don't think there's a breeze in here, Rob.
I know.
It's me talking.
It's just weird. I mean, it's like these things that you're going to hear in your sleep. It's that whole PTSD stuff with the wind. And I'm hearing it. So if you hear anything, we apologize. I can hear Gary loud and clear. But I just want to make sure that there's nothing that's kind of out of whack here. Gary, let's start with the Jerry Kelly announcement about his rheumatoid arthritis. When he walked out of the tournament on Sunday, head down, signed a few autographs, to me it's as low and as down as I've seen Jerry in a long, long time. He played really well for the first 36 holes, had a really tough final round, and I just don't know if you know what it is, Gary? I'll tell you what it is. It's a Twitter video up from the tournament today. All right, I saw that, folks. Too many windows open. The only window open is on the computer. How about that?
Those windows, Rob.
Oh, my goodness. All right, there we go. I don't think when you walked in the news conference that you expected I think we expected, you know, Steve to articulate a little bit about his future, because I know he's been hinting about, you know, how long he wants to do this. And today he wasn't at the State Women's Open, and I'm sure that you know, that hurt. And I think he wanted to be there at the same time. I think he wanted his two girls to do things on their own. But as it relates to Jerry, I mean, I didn't see that one coming. He's had a lot of issues, you know, health-wise, you know, here and there the last few years. But this one is serious.
It is serious, Robin. You know, his results haven't been what we've seen out of Jerry the last few years, or ever since he got on the Champions Tour. Really, he's been a really steady, you know, kind of a top 15 machine, and sprinkling wins here and there. He hasn't won in a while, but his results lately haven't been great. And he said that he's been getting a lot of texts and messages from people saying, "What's wrong, Jerry? This isn't like you." And he said, he finally went public with the diagnosis that he's been suffering from rheumatoid arthritis, which, if people don't know, it's a pretty serious disease that affects the joints. And so you can imagine, if you're a golfer, how that would affect your play. He's been dealing with it for a few months. He's been on medication for about 2 months now. And hopefully they can find the right medications and the right doses and all that stuff. And maybe there's some homeopathic stuff he can explore. But yeah, we sure hope he gets that under control, because we need him. We need him on the Champions Tour. He's a breath of fresh air.
He sure is. And then I want to mention too, Skip Kendall with a great finish, top 20, I believe, and you know, his best finish in several years. He comes back to this every year, and you know, because Steve Stricker and American Family, you know what a you know, what an icon he is in Wisconsin golf, a multiple time state open champion, a guy that played the PGA Tour for years and years and years, and now with the potential, which again we'll talk about in a second, with the format change, you know, he may get lost in the shuffle. It was great to see Skip. I think he's at peace with where his life is right now. I think when he plays as well as he did, and I saw him, you know, hitting some drives out there over the weekend that, you know, were probably longer than I remember him hitting. So I think there is still some game there, but, you know, just like Steve and Jerry, getting up there into the upper 50s, and if not 60, he's, you know, happy giving lessons. He's happy teaching the game. He had Morgan Baxendale, the assistant coach for the Badgers, on his bag, and she is someone who he instructed on her way up. You know, she's from Florida, played at Vanderbilt, and then wound up at South Florida for her final year. I really enjoyed our visits with Skip this week, because he was relaxed, he was funny, he was engaging, and and it just felt like it was a good place for Skip right now.
Yeah, I agree 100%, Rob. Always fun talking to Skip. Boy, you and I go way back with Skip to the time he was, you know, teenager winning and young pro winning state opens. And as you mentioned, I think he's got 720 starts now in PGA Tour sanctioned events between Korn Ferry, PGA Tour, and Champions Tour. And I always think about Skip. You know, he finished second four times on the PGA Tour, never won, two playoff losses, one of them to Phil Mickelson. And I always think how much his life might have changed had he won two of those four tournaments. But on the other hand, it wouldn't have changed him as a person. He's just a great representative of Wisconsin and Wisconsin golf. Always happy to see him, and I hope he comes back next year, but we'll talk about that, Rob. There's a chance that he might not because of the format change.
Well, and you know, it came out when Ernie Els had his victory speech, and getting to that victory speech, I think, speaks too to the other, probably one of the more challenging finishes to a tournament I know I've ever had, in terms of just watching what happened to Steve Stricker, you know, at the end, you know, missing that short putt to extend the playoff. You've covered far more tournaments than I have with Steve in the mix. What were you thinking when you saw him miss that putt? And what were you, you know, what was your impression of the aftermath, the reaction that both that day on Sunday on the grounds, you know, with Ernie Els? I mean, no one wants to win a tournament that way, but it was shocking, Gary. I don't remember a more shocking finish than what I saw on Sunday at U Ridge.
Yeah, Rob. You know, I had a kind of a weird angle because I couldn't see how long the putt was. But, you know, you shot that great video that you posted on Twitter, and I've blown that video up, and I've probably watched it, I'll bet, 50 times now. because I'm trying to gauge how long that putt was. And I don't, you know, it wasn't 3 feet. I think it was maybe longer than 2 feet. So somewhere between 2 and 3 feet. But it's a putt he makes 999 times out of 1,000. I think that's probably safe to say. He's probably missed 5 of those in his career, maybe a few more, but certainly not many. But to miss it at that point, you know, on the first playoff hole in a tournament he hosts and is defending champion, it was a gut punch. And if it was a gut punch to me, I can imagine how he felt, Rob.
You know, I talked to Bobby Stricker on Monday after we played TPC Wisconsin, which was another thing we need to talk about, too. I'm not sure we're going to have time for this podcast, yeah. But, you know, she said that when they got home that night and they had pizza with some friends and, you know, she asked the question, what happened? You know, he mentioned he heard something in the distance. It might have been a motorcycle noise. It could have been something that, you know, and I remember standing there, you know, shooting that video and going through my mind was how quiet it was. I don't believe I've ever heard the 18th green more quiet than it was on Sunday in that playoff with Steve Stricker over that little putt. And, you know, I don't know what he heard and where he heard it from. I know his focus was not what it should have been just to finish that off and then go on to the next hole. But it speaks to how fickle golf is. And one of the greatest putters in the history of the game to miss a putt, like you said, in the tournament he hosts, in a course that was playing host to the tournament for the last time before going to his course next year. I mean, that was just, wow, it was weird. And but at the same time, Ernie Els is a great champion. It's 2 weeks in a row. He's won on the PGA Tour champions. And, you know, the tour would do well if Ernie Els was playing at a very high level if and when Tiger Woods gets there, because we know Steve Stricker will. We know that Padraig Harrington will. We know that Bernhard Langer will. There's a lot of reasons for this tour to only grow in stature. And Ernie, who struggled in the 6 or 7, I don't know what it is, 8 years, I don't know, how long has he been out there? And, you know, he just hasn't been able to seal deals like he did, you know, I felt, on the regular tour more often, being a 4-time major champion.
Yeah, it's good. You know, I think if Steve had to lose to somebody, he would pick Jerry or Ernie maybe as the two people he would like to lose to least, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. If you had to pick some to lose to, it'd be those guys. Tons of respect for Ernie. Steve has tons of respect for him and vice versa. Came out in Ernie's press conference where he just lauded Steve and said, you know, you guys should be proud to have him representing you here in Wisconsin. And, of course, we are. But yeah, it was a tough finish. And, Rob, I blew that, you know, since you told me that about the motorcycle or the noise that Steve thought he heard, I just watched that video again, and I turned up the volume full, and you can hear some kind of noise in the distance, just as he's taking the putter back.
Really?
So, yeah. So there was something. It sounded like a little rumble of some sorts. I don't know if it was I couldn't tell on if it was a motorcycle noise or some other noise, but there was some kind of noise in the distance, and you just wonder if that threw him off.
Boy, that's amazing. And then equally amazing is the fact that, you know, we're standing there waiting to talk to Ernie Els. They go through the formality of the trophy presentation with the guy who just lost the tournament to the guy who won the tournament. Again, that's the second time Steve's been in that situation. The first, again, being Jerry Kelly. So it wasn't, you know, such a tough pill to swallow. You know, that way they're good friends. But and then Ernie gets a chance to say some stuff. And I think Ernie was just so, you know, couldn't believe he was there talking, holding another trophy. And all of a sudden it comes out that, you know, he sits on the senior tour policy board and that they're likely going to switch to a team format when they move to TPC Wisconsin. And we may not get all the way through this topic in the time we have left, Gary, but, you know, you were the first one to hear rumblings of that when you were on the range this week. And then when you covered the media day at the AmFam offices back in early May, when Steve said we might have something, you know, a surprise that we might, you know, go to next year. That was one of the things that when you and I talked about, I said, what do you think that surprise is? I think we both brought up that could be an element, a format change. And it looks like we're on the doorstep of that. Not official yet. Has a lot of things have to happen. But what were your impressions once you started hearing more serious talk about a team format?
Yeah, I heard a little scuttlebutt on the range, a couple of caddies I asked a couple of caddies. One didn't know, and the other one said he's heard that. And then Skip Kendall came in. We talked to him for a little while, I think on Saturday, and he mentioned that he's been hearing that there might be a format change. And then Ernie sort of, I'm sure Nate Polk, that's the last thing he wanted to hear come out of Ernie's mouth, because, you know, as you say, it's not done yet. It's not a done deal. It has to go through several steps and a process before they would make any kind of format change. And so then Nate had to deal with questions from us, which, you know, he was very gracious and in his answers, which were sort of non-answers, but there's nothing he could say about it because it's not done yet. But I think a team format, it sounds very intriguing to me, Rob. You know, there isn't one, I don't believe, on the Champions Tour, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah, and it would sort of maybe copy the Zurich Classic of New Orleans. And that one, they play multiple different formats. So since this would be a three-day tournament, I could see a best ball one day, alternate shot one day, and maybe a two-man scramble the third day. Just kind of spitballing here. But, yeah, kind of a stunner. But I thought more about it, and I think it's probably going to be a really good thing if it goes through.
I thought the thing that Nate said when we talked to him that really stood out is the fact that when they debuted the AmFam Championship, they did it in such a way that they set such a high bar. A lot of these tournaments were just basically, you know, tournaments with bleachers, golfers, a little fanfare on the side, but not too much. And between the Friday night concert, between the, the celebrity foursome, the run that they have at the start of the week, all the things that go on in addition to the pro-ams, they really raised the bar. And there's a lot of other, you know, tournaments that are doing this now. And they're getting great response. We've talked about Iowa. We've talked about Sioux Falls. They do great things at many of these stops, especially in the smaller markets like Madison and like the others. But so I think that, you know, he feels the need to stand out again. And I don't want to say it's getting stale, but they've done such a good job that, and maybe raised the bar so high with some of these, you know, guys they brought in for the foursome. Some people thought, well, didn't have quite the impact this year. Pat Connaughton. And, you know, Michael Phelps back. I mean, this guy, Michael Phelps, is an Olympic icon. And you know, yeah. We're sort of taking him for granted. And I guess it's the era in which we live where we are always expecting more, more, and more. Hard for the AmFam Championship to deliver, but this gives them options. This gives them, you know, an opportunity every year to have unique pairings of players that have been, you know, at their prime. It might bring back certain guys. You know, Russ Cochran played in the Zurich Classic of New Orleans this past year to give him a 700th, I think it was 700th start on the PGA Tour, and or some big number like that, and maybe it was the, you know, combined events. They're able to do things in that format that maybe they can't do in an individual format. And when Tiger gets here, would he be more apt to play in a team format or really excited to play in a team format? I think it remains to be seen, but certainly it wasn't what the PGA Tour champions thought was going to happen there in the aftermath of the outcome on Sunday. They quickly scrambled and had Miller Brady call me to make sure that, we understood that this is not even close to being a done deal in the chain of events that has to happen for it to be the way the AmFam Championship looks in 2025. But, it really got people talking, and I think, you know, they didn't want to take away from the outcome, but then when Ernie talked, it kind of became a part of the storyline. So I don't know, it really was a kind of a surreal ending to the AmFam Championship in a lot of ways. And then the next day, you and I show up at TPC Wisconsin for a media event, and Steve's out there talking about how proud he is of the course. Says a lot about Steve Stricker to get up the next morning and meet the media. I know he also spoke on a tweet with Al Pollock, the PGA Tour champions, one of the content creators there, about, you know, just kind of reviewing what happened the day before. And, you know, so, I mean, again, he's such an upstanding guy. And we all have a lot to look forward to, folks, because Gary and I had a chance to play TPC Wisconsin, and it is – and I didn't think I'd say this, Gary. It is a unique experience. It was a really, really good, challenging golf course that is so much different than University Ridge, and in a good way.
Yeah, it's a completely different course than University Ridge. And, you know, we were talking about earlier today, Rob, what it sort of reminded us of. And now that I think about it, I think the green complexes are a little bit Pinehurst-ish. where the U.S. Open is being played this week. They're not necessarily crown greens like Pinehurst are, but the fall-off and the surrounds that Steve has created, that's going to really test these guys' short games, because they're going to be hitting a flap shot on one hole, a bump and run on the next hole, and putting it from 20 feet off the green maybe on the hole after that. I think the green complexes are really great, and that's directly, that's Steve's influence on the design, because really the course routing, as you know, didn't change a whole lot, Rob. The holes are basically very similar to what they were, a couple of years ago, but the greens and the surrounds are different, and the course is going to play a lot firmer and faster than it used to.
Yeah, I like the fact that, with all the link-style courses we have here in Wisconsin, Sand Valley, Erin Hills, Washington County Golf Course, this one I think is unique because, the other ones just challenge you, go hit the ball as far as you can and then see if you can find the green and get to the green with all the wind and all the other stuff. Here, he's raised the fairways from, where you're teeing off. I'd heard that the sight lines were called into question. They had to, tweak a couple things. But you really don't know where you're hitting the ball off the tee other than you know that if you hit it out there straight, it's going to hit on firm, fast fairways and roll. So you've got to know how far you have to hit it, but you have to trust your line. And you have to trust your line to get around the bunkers and through the bunkers, around the bunkers, and the berms. And I think it's a really cool challenge that I haven't – I also found myself, Gary, comparing it to what old Cherokee was. And and I think a tribute to Cherokee, there were parts of it that were really sound in its design, and some of those holes aren't much different, especially a couple of the par threes. But a couple of the par threes are so much different now, and especially 17 with that rock wall. And when they play it back, it's going to be a challenge, probably into a wind, I think, or if it's from – the west, then it would be a heavy downwind. And either way, tough to control the ball. It was tough to control the ball into the green, Gary, for the most part the other day, no matter which way the wind was blowing, because I always felt it was blowing into my face.
Yeah, it did feel that way. Yeah, you're right, Rob. In fact, I mentioned that out on the course. We played a couple of holes that felt it was in our face, and then we turned and went another direction, still felt like it was in our face. So I jokingly said who turned on the fan when I talked to Dennis Tiziani about it, and he kind of laughed and said that wasn't much of a wind you guys played in. So it's going to be – they're going to get some breeze out there because it's pretty wide open. They removed, I think Dennis said, was it 650 trees, I believe, on the property?
I think so.
It's just a windy area, and, those fairways now, they scraped off all the peat and dug the sand from underneath it and put the sand on top. And you're right, it's going to play firm and fast. I think controlling the ball on the ground is going to be a factor there because these guys are used to hitting it in the air and hitting it at targets. But when it hits the ground, it can do some funny things there, and they're going to have to be very cognizant of that.
And last but not least, I mean, the greens are still good. We talked about the complexes, but just the firmness of them. If they're new greens right now, it'll be great to have a year under their belt by the time the tournament rolls around next year. I know that there was a lot of discussion when I was out at the NCAA championships about playing a course that had been recently renovated and basically brand new out there, a Gil Hands redesign. And, anytime you introduce new greens, it takes at least a year, if not two, for them to kind of become more receptive. So I'm glad that, the AmFam Championship has that extra year to do that because I do think they're going to be very good. And, of course, a guy like Steve Stricker is going to put a premium on what he did with greens. So that will be neat. I can't wait for next year, both in terms of, if they get to that format change, when they get to the new course. The only thing I have trepidation about, Gary, is that I think we're going to go from basically the U.S. Women's Open to the Boys State Championship to the AmFam Championship all in about a 10-day span. I don't want to scare you into doing anything drastic, Gary, because I want to, we got to have everybody by our side to get through that. But as epic as this last week and a half has been, we're staring down the barrel of another one next year.
Yeah, it's going to be quite a run. And, Steve has such pride in what he did there, and rightfully so. I think it's funny that he texted both of us and asked us for our honest opinions of the course. He really is, I think, curious to know what we thought about it. And I told him I loved it, and I love the green complexes, and it's going to be a fun test. And I can't help think, Rob, that in 2 years, We might see Steve and Tiger as partners if there's a team format there. Can you imagine what the gallery would be like if that happened?
Oh, that would be amazing.
Yeah.
And that's why the biggest shocker when we talked to Ernie in the post news conference, you know, he really mentioned about his gap in the speech was, you know, I asked him, you know, if he has any thoughts about who he might partner with. Well, heck, he's already chosen his partner, Tim Herron.
Yeah.
That was, and the fact it was Tim Herron was a shocker. So, you know, again, we just had a lot of surprises here in the last few weeks or in the last week or so. And then today you were good enough to come out and join us here at the State Women's Open and help me out because it became a little bit much at the end. And the long story short was another, you know, second place finish for Bobby Stricker, her third in a row at the State Women's Open. The last two were in playoffs. This one looked like it might go to a playoff, but Elise Hoven of Grafton, a rising senior at North Dakota State, six birdies, I believe it was today, Gary, including a 40-footer on the final hole to kind of put it away. And, again, a lot of storylines I had in my mind, but the one I thought was, you know, Bobby Stricker was clearly the golfer that had, you know, kind of the most professional experience in the situation, and nobody else was really in that kind of form. Elise played really well to kind of become the number two or three golfer at NDSU this year. But, it's one of those things for the Stricker family where the more you put yourself in those situations, the more you can either thrive or have to, you know, kind of learn from runner-up finishes. What did you think watching that unfold today? It felt like, you know, Bobby missed a lot of putts that she could, you know, that, you know, other days she might have made and just wasn't able to put the heat on Elise Hoven.
Yeah, Elise played great. The first time I'd really seen her play, Rob, I know you've seen her play a bunch. I was very impressed. Very composed, made some clutch shots and that putt at the end. When the tournament, I don't know if it was in doubt, but it could have, you know, a three putt there and Bobby chips in or something and boom, you have a different tournament finish there. So, yeah, that was great. And I want to know, Rob, did you talk to Bobby? But I'm curious about one thing. Bobby birdied 16. Then they get to the 17 tee, and it's an uphill par three. And Bobby had honors but did not hit first. Elise hits it to 10 feet, and Bobby hits it in the bunker. I'm wondering why Bobby didn't hit first, and maybe, you know, she had a chance to put some pressure on Elise had she hit a good shot, but did not hit first. Did you talk to her about that?
It was fascinating on both ends to talk to the two golfers, but mainly Bobby because – you know, she did have the option of hitting first. It's an I don't know what the hole is. It's an uphill par three. Not sure what it was playing. But it was uphill, downwind. And basically what Bobby was trying to do was watch the two other tee shots and try to really feel comfortable with her club selection. She really wanted to hit a 7-iron. And when Elise put her an 8-iron in there about 10 feet, you know, you and I and Jim Kelce were up there along with, you know, a fair number of other players and parents and things, and that got a big applause. Bobby still didn't think she could get an 8-iron over that front bunker. So she pulls 7 and then proceeds to do something that maybe, you know, the two of us have done from time to time. We don't hit it quite like we wanted. It should have been a full 7 for her. And she just thought because Elise hit 8, and she pulled 7, that maybe I think mentally she thought she didn't have to hit it quite as hard as she thought. And so she kind of, I don't want to say she pulled off of it a little bit, but she didn't hit it as crisp as she would have. And I think I kind of heard a couple of iron shots down the stretch that you could make that same, you know, description of. I think her approach shot on 7 or on 18, we were right next to her, and I that's why my phone died, Gary. I put the Bushnell app up and to find out how many yards she had because we were right there. It was 167. It's a short par 5. I don't know if it's always played as a par 5, but and she came up short and a little bit left, you know, on the green, and just, you know, I don't think hit it quite as good as she needed to or wanted to in that situation. But same thing there on 17. And you know, they've been playing ready golf all week. She probably could have done the same thing on an earlier hole when she birdied. The two birdies she had today, Gary, she followed up with bogeys and never really put the heat on. But that was curious. And then, You know, there wasn't they're kind of redoing some of the bunkers at Meadowbrook, and some have a little bit more sand in them than others. It looked as though that one might not have had as much sand because she kind of bladed the bunker shot over the green just a little bit. And then, you know, they've done a great job. You know, when Elise Hoven, you know, holed out for birdie on 9, I told Jason Simulian right before that, the head pro and general manager at the course, that, you know, missing the green hasn't been that big of a disappointment to the gals in that final group, because they were doing such a great job of chipping close. You basically just get the club under it, get it on and rolling, and it gets to the hole. It did on 9 for Elise. She made it from behind the green. But, you know, Bobby on both 17 and 18, you know, had troubles. The 17 came out a little bit hot, and it rolled out. She was able to – what did she do? Did she make that one? I think she made that one to save bogey.
She did.
Yeah. And but then on 18, it was funny because, you know, Steve was texting me asking, you know, what was going on. And then finally Izzy Stricker, his youngest daughter, who also finished in the top 10, finished. And then so she was given a play-by-play. And I'm standing by Izzy here in Medicine, and she's watching Bobby, and Bobby's got, you know, a similar chip, and this time, you know, the club just kind of grabbed, and I started to see in certain areas where the grass was pretty lush around the green surrounds at Meadowbrook, you know, that a couple times in the last 2 days, and I don't want to say she chunked it, but she didn't hit it as crisp as she needed to get it on the green with momentum to be able to get the run out she needed to maybe either make the shot for eagle or at least make birdie and then make Elise's putt maybe look a little different. So a lot of great stuff down the stretch. I mean, this is a great state women's open, Gary, because, you know, we had a waiting list for a little bit, another 65 player field that, you know, fills a wave. You know, I think, you know, one of the, I guess it was Peyton Haugen, who had a great couple of rounds early to get into contention, you know, mentioned that when she got to the range on Monday and looked around, she said, boy, you know, everybody's here. Everybody's here, except, you know, Tess Hackworthy, the defending champion, who, kind of retired from professional golf, has taken a full-time job now, couldn't get away. And then Emily Lauterbach tried the LPGA Monday qualifier for the event this week. I'm not sure. I think that's in Indiana, possibly, but and she missed by a couple shots, so we missed her. But otherwise, I mean, it is pretty much everybody who's playing college golf. Most of the many of the mini tour pros, although no Taylor McCorkle, Tatum back, but Mackenzie Hahn came back. So, you know, I thought it was a great, you know, Women's State Open, great drama, great golf course. I just love the way that Meadowbrook finishes, you know, with some drama. And I think we'll see that at TPC Wisconsin, too, because I like that final loop is a three-hole stretch closest to the clubhouse. You know, no matter where you are, you'll be able to get out there and see the great ending. So today it was a good test, and it's a course that you have a history on, Gary D'Amato, down there at Meadowbrook.
Well, yeah, Rob, 10 years in Racine. I covered the Racine Tri-Course every year there, and I also played in the high school regionals there. My playing partner, as I told you today, one of my playing partners was Jerry Marifsky, the sharpshooter from South Milwaukee, who had a really good college career at Drake. But, you know, we talked about this. We've been talking about the Women's State Open. We haven't mentioned McKenna Nelson, who had the round of the day in round 2 and then the round of the tournament in round 3. She shot 71-69 to finish, and if not for that first round 81, who knows what would have happened. But what a great final 36 holes for McKenna.
Well, I think it's pretty cool with you know, the fact that we have so much promise out of what we're seeing today. You know, you've got Elise Hoven, who to me, you know, when she talked to me, you know, I thought maybe, you know, I'd hear, okay, I've really worked on my game in the last year. I think I might try, you know, go pro. She has no intention of going pro. It's kind of like when I talked to Pearson Hunt after the NCAAs. Now, Pearson is going on to play professional golf. He's in the qualifier up in Canada this week for the second half of the PGA Tour America season. But he made the comment that when you turn pro, it can be a very, very lonely thing, because you're going from playing with your teammates to now all of a sudden being on your own. And that's the one thing that Elise Hoven mentioned when she, you know, got back home from college. It was back to, you know, practicing on her own, which would be what the future would be if she turned professional. They had a blast. Nora Roberts, one of her teammates from Racine out at NDSU, had everybody from the NDSU crew, Joe Baranchik, Hannah Dunk, who's transferring there from Green Bay, Nora Roberts, and then Elise Hovind and Maddie Hicks, who was Elise's caddy today. And I think they had one other caddy who's also a teammate up there staying. So it was really a fun week for them. And so you had that. But, boy, you know, McKenna Nelson is really on the verge. And I think, you know, once she kind of gets, that first round thing figured out, she's going to be really solid. It's funny because, you know, she almost won this thing, Gary, right next door to the course where she won the match play last year or two yeah. years ago, I guess, last year was, you know, over at Racine Country Club, becoming the youngest to do that. And then that helped her become the youngest to win Women's Player of the Year. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, really cool stuff. You're right, Rob. A lot of good young players on both young men and young women who we're going to be writing about for many years to come.
So what's left in my trip here before I head back to Arizona and the 112-degree temperatures that they had down there today, I've got the finals of the men's senior match play tomorrow over at Janesville Riverside, and then I'm going to go up and help you up at USAM qualifier in Stevens Point, you know, kind of do some of the video stuff. And you know, I saw the field. You know, this is a new thing. It's 18 holes instead of 36 at the local, and it's a local to a sectional. And there's exemptions into the sectional for people, that, and I can tell by the field at Point, Gary, that there's a number of them that are, you know, that won't be playing but will be playing at the next step in the process. It's a different field. Have you looked at the field for Friday?
I have not yet. I was going to do that actually when we hang up here, Rob. I've got it queued up. I'm ready to look at it. Yeah, because I'm interested to see who's in it.
Well, spoiler alert, it's a good field. The way I describe it is it's kind of golfers that, again, are on the verge, kind of like what we talked about with McKenna Nelson. A number of the college kids that maybe quite haven't had the summer success. So it's neat. I think there's going to be 8 qualifiers going on to that sectional. And, you know, but it'll be on a, you know, very good course, the Stevens Point Country Club. And, you know, but it'll be, you won't see, you know, quite the, I guess, the upper echelon of the, you know, college group. Cameron Huss is exempt into the next stage of qualifying. And, you know, that kind of golfer who's had some experience in, you know, winning state AMs and state opens. So it'll be interesting. I know it's Charlie Erlandson, Jacob Beckman will be there. So I think those are guys who need to get through this to get on to the next level to kind of, you know, I think start their summer, you know, in a good way, and especially with State AM coming up. So it'll be interesting. You've covered 18 whole U.S. Open qualifiers to a sectional. I think this has that vibe to it.
And I might be wrong about this, but does the medalist exempt from the sectional, and does the medalist go straight to the U.S. Amateur, or am I wrong about that?
I got to look at that. You might be right on that. There's a lot to, I mean, this is new. We're going to explore, which is why I'm coming up. We might do that over social media Friday, Gary, so that we're all, you know, by the time people read your story, they'll understand what exactly you're writing about. And you can tell the story about more about the people getting through and the form they're showing than anything else. So,
that does it for Talking.Golf this week. For Gary D'Amato, this is Rob Hernandez. We'll talk golf again next week.